Good morning. You are listening to Raven Radio. Today is Thursday, October 25th, 2012. I'm Holly Keene, and this is Raven News. It's National Farm to School Month, and a high school in Sitka is celebrating by serving locally grown food to its students. Not only did they get to eat fresh fare, they also gathered and prepared it themselves. KCAW's Ann Bryce has more.
Would you like milk? Would you like lunch?
We cook lunch. The entire class cooks lunch for the whole school.
18-year-old Aaron Quakendahl is taking a culinary class at Pacific High. It teaches students about food preparation and nutrition. In honor of National Farm to School Month, the class made a meal using local ingredients. Co-principal Sarah Ferenzi helped choose the menu.
Coho salmon with a lemon sorrel and dill pesto, served on a bed of kale.
Wait a second. Teenagers eat kale? And they like it?
Everybody thinks it's impossible to make children eat fruits and vegetables, but it's not.
All it takes, she says, is being more involved with the food we eat.
They need to have some personal investment in it, you know, and I really felt like the students who went and picked the vegetables had personal investment in those vegetables.
And then you got to go out there and, like, dig through the potato bins to find the potatoes and pull up carrots and stuff.
Sitka Conservation Society's Fish to Schools program provided the salmon, and students got the vegetables from down-to-earth U-Pick Farm. The meal also included mashed potatoes, a barley biscuit,
and blueberry apple crisp. That was sort of as close as we could get to local. For the fruit, the apples are from Washington and the blueberries were locally picked.
It might sound easy, but it's actually pretty tough to eat food grown in Sitka.
It just takes a lot of effort to grow stuff here. Stuff doesn't just spring up like it does in California or other warmer places. We have so much rain and ultimately so little sun, like this summer, it just rained all summer long. And so sometimes stuff just doesn't grow. And
Erin says that although she hasn't always enjoyed cooking, the culinary class has shown her that it can be fun.
I like chopping up vegetables. Something about dicing vegetables is like therapeutic or something.
And it can also be useful.
In order to cook in the kitchen, we had to all get our food handler's card. It's a great thing to have. It's like a computer literacy class. You're just that much more desirable in the work world. My dad's like, you gotta get a job, kid. So I gotta go get a job.
17-year-old Paulette James says she can taste the difference from a typical school lunch.
I feel like we definitely have top-notch food. We're not just eating burgers that were thrown on the fryer. You can definitely, like, tell the difference in the food that, like, it's being prepared with love.
Reporting in Sitka, I'm Ann Bryce.
Petersburg wants to form a borough. Their neighbor to the north, Juneau, has opposed the Petersburg plan, and now they've made it official by filing an appeal with the state's local boundary commission. Joe Vicknicki reports.
Petersburg area residents will be voting in December on forming a new borough that would encompass more than 3,800 square miles of land and water in southeast. Juneau filed a competing petition to the local boundary commission seeking to annex some of the same mainland area between the two communities. Amy Mead is assistant attorney for the city and borough of Juneau.
Our main argument is that the LBC failed to critically analyze the CBJ's competing claims as to that area that overlaps between the two petitions filed by the city and borough of Juneau and Petersburg, and that the LBC was obligated to do so before making a decision on Petersburg's petition pursuant to Article 10, Section 3 of the Alaska Constitution.
Juneau filed its annexation petition about 7 months after Petersburg's incorporation petition. The CBJ sought to consolidate the two or at least postpone the Petersburg decision. However, the State Commission denied that request late last year and this year decided the Petersburg incorporation should go to a vote. Former Juneau Mayor Bruce Patelu, who supports the Juneau appeal, says it's not meant to delay or stop the Petersburg election.
Juneau has never objected to the idea of Petersburg becoming a borough. That's a decision which residents of Petersburg get to decide. The question is whether the extent of that borough should encompass the areas in the mainland, including Hobart Bay and north.
Patelo maintains the capital city has a superior claim to that disputed land. The contested territory originally was over 1,900 square miles on the mainland. The Boundary Commission in its June decision voted to remove Tracy Arm and Whiting River from Petersburg's proposed borough. That's a difference of about 500 square miles. Petersburg argued against consolidating or delaying its proposal. Mayor Al Dwyer says he isn't surprised by Juneau's appeal for the contested lands.
The main issue I think that was on our side was we had our a request in first. And also, like I said earlier, you know, Juno had a chance for years and just neglected it until we put ours in, and all of a sudden they won it.
Likewise, Petersburg Borough Attorney Jim Brennan says he's confident Petersburg will prevail in the appeal because Juno was able to make its case before the Boundary Commission.
All their filings in support of their own annexation petition, and of course their written filings in opposition to the Petersburg Borough petition, were taken into account by the local Boundary Commission. And as you know, Juno sent down a sizable contingent to testify at the local Boundary Commission in hearing in Petersburg in opposition to the Petersburg petition.
Brennan says under the normal timelines of an administrative appeal, a decision isn't expected until well after Petersburg area voters decide on formation of the new borough this December. State Division of Elections Director Gail Fanumiai says the division will proceed with the Petersburg borough vote as scheduled unless directed otherwise by the court. In Petersburg, I'm Joe Vignicki.
Alaska is just one of the states considering the best way to export natural gas. No fewer than 17 companies have applied to export the fuel overseas. A proposed terminal at the port of Astoria, Oregon, at the mouth of the Columbia River, is gaining attention. Residents and businesses are giving regulators an earful of opinions. Northwest News Network correspondent Tom Bantz reports.
As public meetings go, Monday's visit by the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission to the Oregon coast was more tense and raucous than usual.
We will not change the character of the...
Hisses and guffaws interrupted a presentation from energy developer Oregon LNG. Later, different factions in the audience unleashed boisterous applause when they heard something they agreed with, ignoring the moderator's request for respectful quiet. A parade of speakers alternately condemned or welcomed a multi-billion-dollar proposal to build a natural gas import-export terminal at the mouth of the Columbia River. Some called it immoral, others a godsend of family-wage jobs. The energy developer appreciatively patted on the back or labeled a bamboozler.
The price of producing the electricity we use will
go up.
Some of the same dynamics played out during a similar hearing earlier this month in Coos Bay. Another company has plans for a natural gas export terminal there. Both of these projects started years ago as gas import gateways. Then new drilling technologies and new discoveries in North America glutted our marketplace with cheap natural gas. It's three or four times more expensive in Asia. So the Oregon-based exporters see a hot market for natural gas they plan to get mostly from Western Canada. The Northwest Construction Alliance likes the idea. Rick Metzger speaks for the Consortium of Labor Unions.
This is a commodity that's going to go somewhere from Canada, which is enthusiastic about being in the export market. So it's an opportunity to create jobs here with nominal impacts on gas prices in the United States and certainly in the Northwest.
Supporters and opponents of selling natural gas overseas wield dueling studies regarding the domestic price impact. Columbia Riverkeeper Conservation Director Dan Sears contends the volume of proposed exports will have a dramatic impact on regional energy prices.
So what we're looking at now is a jobs versus jobs argument. You know, increased energy prices will harm manufacturing, will harm Northwest jobs.
Sears objects to giving away what he calls a competitive advantage.
Low natural gas prices are a key feedstock for a lot of industries in the Northwest, and low labor prices combined with low energy prices overseas would be a very difficult competition for our industries.
The chief executive of project developer Oregon LNG only concedes this export project could lead to a minimal increase in domestic natural gas prices, around 35 cents per month for a typical household, says Peter Hansen. But he argues natural gas exports would lessen America's trade deficit.
The Obama administration has pledged to double exports from the U.S. over about a five-year period, I think the term was, and this would be one way to do so. Here we have something that we as a country can export that other countries want and need, and we should export it.
The U.S. Department of Energy has put all pending applications for natural gas exports on hold while it awaits its own study on whether exports are in the public interest. That analysis was originally expected to be ready this summer, but now the target date is after the November election. I'm Tom Bontzi in Warrenton, Oregon.
Alaska State Troopers say the person missing off a fishing boat near Skagway was a 61-year-old Haines man. Troopers identified the man who fell overboard Tuesday as Theodore Lynch. The crew of the Darling Michelle reported Lynch was working with gear when an unexpected wave hit the boat and knocked him over to the side. The other crew members threw him a life ring and tried to pull him on board. Lynch's life jacket broke and fell off, and he was unable to latch onto the ring. The Coast Guard has suspended a search. Search and Rescue Controller Nick Myers stated the agency searched an area of about 20 square miles. Oral arguments are scheduled to begin today in the trial of a man accused of killing two Hoonah police officers in 2010. John Marvin Jr. faces murder and weapons charges in the deaths of Sergeant Anthony Wallace and Officer Matthew Tokuoka of the Hoonah Police Department. The two were gunned down in front of Marvin's residence in August of 2010. A jury of three women and 11 men were chosen late Wednesday afternoon. Ultimately, 12 jurors will decide the case, but State Court Judge David George said he would not announce the alternates until later. Also Wednesday, George denied a defense motion to move the trial from Juneau. Defense attorney Eric Hedlund argued that there had been extensive pretrial publicity, but George said he didn't believe that any exposure had been inflammatory. And that's all for Raven News. If you've missed any of our stories or would like to hear them again, please visit us online at kcaw.org.